Any questions or anything to say? So when I spoke yesterday about Chögyam Trungpa's teaching about teacher-student connection, and how at the same time there can be a sense of, let's say, coming home, and then easily and naturally the supermarket mind comes. So when, and then the image of the fire, getting close to the fire, getting burned, and then running away, but wanting to be, and just naturally we start to find near. Trying to grab the fire burns. But it's the same thing, grabbing the fire and supermarket, thinking where we start to kind of get excited about how all our dreams are going to come true through the magic of this other person. And so it's out of balance in a lot of ways. We're leaning way out and we're looking way up. And also naturally, we start to find the dreams not coming true, but something still happening. And so he talks about tests, that he puts it like the teacher gives tests, but it's not quite like that. It's just that tests happen through life. And what he means by tests that open us, and the tests are disappointments. This kind of process of opening, which means clearing our head from thinking that the dreams are what we need to make happen in order to get what we actually already feel is sort of bubbling and going on under the surface. And so then that, like, I love that phrase that Anton used in the opening talk about love and finding the improbable outflow from the presence of love. And improbable inflow as well, we could say. And so one of the most improbable is that teacher-student, and again, for many of us, the main teacher is actually inside us. And especially as Westerners, at least for a really long time, even if we're meeting teachers, the one that we're most close to is really inside us, because we have such problems in really trusting another person. To let that happen can take a long time. So meanwhile, our best teacher is right here, and eventually anyway, it's right here too. It's just nice when it's possible to trust people when that's appropriate, however long it might take. So, but that Trungpa, though he was also very much a formal guru figure of a big group of people, and still is in a way, he insists that the actual meeting of teacher-student is a meeting of equals, a communication of minds of equals. And I think that we might hear it and be like, yeah. To actually feel that, like in the Lunig poem of yesterday also, that face-to-face, heart-to-heart, deeply serious innocence. Where it's not this person who has something special that we're gonna get. Or I think another thing that seems to happen is maybe in reaction to the thought that the teacher might have something we don't, then we kind of something happens inside of wanting to look down on and feeling, well, I'm better at that. I'm better than that somehow. And it's hard to come to just friendly, just open. Also, that's why I used the example. It's also different from any other relationship. And it's also very similar. A difference is if we're talking about an outer person that seems somehow to help openness and absorption, to continue long enough until that natural ability can stand on its own, is that there is, it's an exchange, there's a mutual meeting, but there's a certain way that that need is one way. There's a certain way that there's another exchange that's important for both, but the teacher isn't going to the student and asking questions about meditation. And that, I think, is hard for us Westerners to come to terms with. That we're friends, but... and that it isn't a one-way street. There's a certain way, there's a one-way need. It's hard to take. And so then we easily take it also personally, and that's where those first two steps of the teacher-student relationship that Trungpa talks about, where we're all excited and we're trying to win the teacher over. So that can come in the miserable form that I gave my example yesterday, where I'm doing my laundry and I think he is thinking badly of me, though he probably didn't see me. There, crouched by the toilet block. It's not that we had a nice laundry place in Bodh Gaya, did we? It was a kind of, that was still in the first stage of trying to win someone over, trying not to be what I am, thinking I can't be what I am and get what I need. So that's the miserable supermarket experience. Maybe they're going to kick me out. Which is one terrible part of the supermarket in Lucknow, which is my closest thing to a hometown, sadly. Is they have like, when I like to go in the morning when it's not very busy. People think it opens at midday, but it opens at 10, so there's hardly anyone there. But there's hardly any shoppers there, but there are lots of people there, and they're all watching to make sure. Some of them have uniforms and most of them don't. They're trying to catch you stealing something. It's like 10 to 1. I'm not exaggerating. So whatever kind of supermarket experience, there's not the feeling of being at home at first. So all of that said, I'm not sure where your question was going, just to say more about it. Was there a specific question? So it's what happens is we feel that something's going on, and it feels important, and it feels like home. And sometimes it feels also like we can't get that anywhere else. And so that easily gets the dream function, like the all the plans that we made when we thought we weren't quite good enough or could be better or whatever, they want to also get a piece, so to speak. It's hard to tell that it's two different places that are both active. Something that's happening, that's deep and impossible to catch, but still meeting And then there's all the dreams of meeting that are like, oh, maybe we can make it like that or like that or like that. And so it's to feel the difference is really, really important. And that is really important also without any other person, but in meditation, whether we feel something bubbling along or not, something's happening. And it's clear to me in the hall already, something has really happened. And you might have had a really hard day. Some people had a really hard day, it's or two. And already, it has changed. There's less restlessness. I know, it's hard to feel the difference of what's happening here. That's not all that's going on. There's also something like whoop, that happened through our practice. Through staying, though it was intense for some people. Don't worry if it wasn't. Don't worry if it wasn't intense for you, but even if it was intense for the last day or two, and even if it still feels it's intense and there's just only a lot happening up here, something else is going on and has come available to feel in the hall through your practice. So if your focus is here through habit or because there's something hard to miss going on, it might seem that that's all that's going on. But just by staying, you didn't leave. You might have left. Mentally, energetically, or whatever, but you're here. And so the second part we could say is maybe the what Chögyam Trungpa calls the tests or the disappointments, where the dream, whether it comes true or not, even when it comes true, it's like, oh, is that all? Or, ah, that's good, and it's gone. And it's okay. That's nice. So. When we can allow that kind of disappointment, not as a sort of mark against us, like a bad grade in school or something, or if it is, then what we're trying to get is bad grades. If there's no way to change the grading system or whatever, like, then we want bad grades. Seriously. But staying, and then the feedback comes, the dream came true and it was good, and that stays with us, and it's gone, and it's okay that it's gone. We don't need to keep it going. So then the place of dream is lower. It's not that important. Or it doesn't come true, doesn't come true, doesn't come true. And also, it's not that important. And so Trungpa talks about this also really nicely. He says, this seems to be the point. The impulse of searching for something is in itself a hang-up. When this impulse begins to wear out, do you know what that means? Okay, also hang-up, yeah. He lived in the United States and he worked really, really hard to use the language of the times, and now it's no longer the time. So a hang-up, help me, Ernst. A problem. Yeah. We could say it's where we don't notice that we've gotten back on the wrong bus. We keep getting on the wrong bus, and the hang-up part would be where it's like a blind spot. where I get back on the same bus, even though it was just went the wrong way, but I get back on the same one. Also, a hang-up is like a neurosis, like where we hold back. So yeah, stuck. That's probably. And sometimes we're really proud of that holding back, or that getting on that bus. So sometimes we're really proud of searching. So this is where I'm saying the importance of staying. But if we start to make that into a dream that we want to fulfill, then we're back in the impulse of searching for something, which in itself is a hang-up. So in itself is a blindness and a blinding that what comes next is repetition instead of something fresh. I'm trying to feel back to the 70s. I guess a hang-up would be maybe when you are trying to follow the rules, whatever rules. Like it might be the rules of the dream, which aren't the rules of society, or instead of going with the flow. In my words, what he's talking about is confidence. When this impulse begins to wear out, so another way to say it would be, for example, if someone is coming in on a scooter and they turn off the motor to be quiet at the gate and they roll in. They could play the game of rolling in, not using the brake, and because it's gonna, the energy of the bike eventually will stop by itself. So that energy wears out, this kind of thing. To wear out also would be like you wear the clothes until they fall apart. When this impulse, so the impulse of searching for something, when this impulse begins to wear out, then our fundamental basic nakedness begins to appear. Did we want that? Yeah, I will. When this impulse, which is the impulse of searching for something, which is different from that kind of openness or readiness or willingness not to stay stuck, but searching for something, when this impulse begins to wear out, to die down, then our fundamental, so the most, that like the foundation of the house, the most first and bottom part that holds everything else, basic, same thing, the base, nakedness, no clothes, it's all worn out, begins to appear. So again, it's a quality that we're not creating, but we're uncovering. So our fundamental basic nakedness, so we could just say nakedness, because nakedness is what's behind everything. But he's obviously putting some emphasis here. Our nakedness begins to appear. So what we're born with that knows about exchange begins to appear. It begins to be visible. And the meeting of the two minds begins to take place. And Anna, that is the feeling of, it's hard to just stay. If sometimes people talk about, why don't we do a literally naked Vipassana retreat? And how would it be to just stay with everything that could come? It's so easy to run to and away and not just stay, but staying not as a, not like telling the dog to stay. Giving up, impressing and giving up, being impressed. So it's not only where we finally get tired of trying to win the teacher over, in Trungpa's word, trying to impress everybody. Do you know the word impress? And for me, it's important also the word impress in the sense of, it's like pressing in. We want to make an impression, like leave a mark, kind of. A little bit like a dog would for territory. So giving up trying to make an impression, that feels like being naked, but part of it is also giving up wanting to be impressed, which is that impulse of searching for something starts to get less and less. Either one would be so liberating. It's not that we're unwilling to appreciate, yeah? To feel the preciousness of, but to give up being impressed. Do you feel how big that is? Or to give up, maybe we get impressed, but to give up wanting to be impressed. We go and look for someone to impress me. And it's not friendly. How do we do it? Why do we do that? Tell me. You know all about it. What do you know to be true?
Love.
Love. So did you hear, she's asking why do we do it, and I'm saying she knows why we do it. And she's saying obvious things come to mind, and the first thing she said was love. How does being impressed have anything to do with love? So we do tend to mix love and recognition. So she was saying there's also a movement in impressing and or trying to impress and trying to be impressed. We're starting from a place of I'm not sure if I have any significance or if I'm supposed to have any significance. But something feels good when there's some kind of confirmation that I have significance. Is that what you said?
Yes.
So what do we do with that? So, Anushka wants to say to throw it away. What should we throw away? How do we throw away the need to be recognized? You've done it today. Simplicity, did you say?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Simplicity. It's a good word. Sorry to pressure. So simplicity could be where even though there is a need or a strong wish, to be reminded of my significance by someone else or by myself. Even though there seems to be a strong reach towards being reminded of my significance by someone else or talking about my significance, am I not, within myself. Even when that's going on, simplicity could be, okay, even though that's going on. Another word for staying. Another word for nakedness. It doesn't, then, there's no directions for then how to meet the mind, how to make the mind meet the mind, how to meet the inner teacher. But Gurdjieff, who was another teacher from the 20th century, talks about, he was also known for his intensity and also spent a lot of his time handing out candy to little kids and doing service work in poor neighborhoods. And he talks about three things that could go on there. And one is to destroy mercilessly without any compromises whatsoever. So you know the word destroy. Without mercy. Without seeming compassion, without stopping. Without any compromises whatsoever. So we could say without hesitation, without holding back, without saying, you can keep a few of your dreams and we'll just get rid of these today. Or at least maybe it's one dream that's getting disappointed today. That whole thing is completely disappointing. We don't need to try to make it better. We just, oh, it was a dream. And that's what dreams do. So to destroy mercilessly without any compromises whatsoever. Okay, and then he uses his horrible English, clunky language that he took great pains to come to only this word would do. In our mentation and feeling, so in our thinking and feeling. The beliefs and views by centuries rooted in us about everything existing in the world. It's a lot of disappointment. To destroy in our thinking and feeling beliefs and views by centuries rooted in us. So not only what has happened in the last 10, 20, 30, 40, etc. years, but by centuries rooted in us collectively. About what? About everything. About what kind of everything? Everything existing in the world. Okay? What he's saying is we can live without all of that. Or that we can live with it in a totally different way. An uncompromising kind of way. So that's one thing that can happen in nakedness or coming down to the foundation. Giving up, in my language, impressing or being impressed. Or being totally disappointed. In one of his books, which is designed to do that, to help destroy mercilessly without any compromise whatsoever. It's just an example. He talks about how the Greek and the Roman cultures that we have been taught to be the peak. He talks about them as very rudimentary, very rough. Some shepherds that didn't have much spiritual experience, who had a few rules and ideas and everything based on that. So that's one example. And it's curious to just, if you read that part of his book, to just have that in mind. And or living in India, where they have slightly adopted the British education, but also they have a lot of confidence in their own culture, and the center of gravity being here, there's China next door, and Tibet, and Sri Lanka, and et cetera. Like so many ancient cultures where there was a lot of spiritual input in the civilization. And it's easier to kind of, oh, our Greek and Roman gods and goddesses, and so on. To accept that in a different way. But if we're talking about mercilessly without any compromises, so the way we drink the tea, what's happening? What's belief and view? And what else is there? And what's good in it? Is the belief and the view good in it? Or is the drinking the tea good? Is there some goodness somewhere? Something else that can happen in, let's call it bare naked goodness, is Gurdjieff's word, his writings, he designed them to help get used to the goodness of what is possible post the end of the world of beliefs and views. To help arise in us and get used to the goodness of what is possible in a human being and a human life. To start to be able to take that in and let it out. How good and sound, so kind of what would be worth staying true to, that we could feel. So it would be like someone who has a good musical ear who can feel when the tone is on. We start to be able to, that starts to arise. So he says to assist the arising. Starts to be possible. To hear the underlying harmony that we could stay true to. That's better than staying true to the idea that we were with. And having gotten more used to staying true to the goodness without all the beliefs and views, Gurdjieff talks about helping arise a true perception of the world. So after all of that, helping arise a true perception of the world. So through the practice of just feeling what's worth staying true to, what rings us like a bell when we stay true, no matter what, to that. And through that practice of staying true, we still need some help, possibly, for there to arise like an actual direct perception of things as they are. Another way to talk about this, I have another Lunig poem or two. Is as we stay less true to the personality or persona, what can happen? So it's one of his prayer poems. It says, God, and again, I don't know what he means by that, but God bless our contradictions. So contradiction would be literally something that speaks against. So where we seem to be like one person over here and one person over there. One day we like tea and one day we don't. God bless our contradictions, those parts of us which seem out of character. Do you know what that means? Out of character. So in a play, in theater, the actor wants to stay in character, not distracted by, oh, it's chai time, for example, and coming out of character. That character doesn't like chai, doesn't have chai time, etc. Wants to stay inside that bubble, that personality. So God bless our contradictions. God bless those parts of us which seem out of character, which don't stay true to the personality. Let us be boldly and gladly out of character. Let us be creatures of paradox. Do you know that word? And variety. Let us be creatures of paradox and variety. Creatures of contrast, light and shade. Creatures of faith. So I'm talking about staying true. And then he says, so suddenly this word faith. What in the world? What to be faithful to, or just being faithful? He says, God be our constant. So something invisible, maybe vast, maybe tiny, maybe inside, maybe outside, maybe all of that, be our constant. Not our personality. Not our expectations. So we are very willing to be disappointed and to disappoint others. Not on purpose, but just because you have an expectation of me doesn't mean I have to stay in character. Let something else be our constant. Let us step out of character into the unknown. And then what? Here we are again, naked. Let us step out of character into the unknown, saying the same thing. Simplicity, naked. And then Lunig, Michael Lunig, gives us a little description of how it is. He says, so let us step, so something else be our constant. What is your word for God? Let us step out of character into the unknown. Let us be naked of character and into the unknown to struggle and love and do what we will. Amen. To struggle and love and do what we will. And I like there's the ambiguity in do what we will. Sometimes it's do what we will, like what I will to do. And sometimes it's just what happens. Whatever it's going to be, it will be. So there's a lovely poem by Wendell Berry, who's a U.S. poet who's still living, in his 80s, I believe. Still, it's maybe worth mentioning, because he mentions it, still in love with his wife after 50 years, and still farming, still writing poems, still attending protests of mountaintop mining in his area. So first of all, there's a poem that's called Stay Home. And he's just talking about how it is for him when he stays home. But then he says, you stay home too. And he says how it is for him. And then he says, I'm staying home, you stay home too. So it's saying, I'm saying how great it is for me when I'm doing my farm and I get up in the morning and the horse and the forest and my wife and my children. But you stay home too, in your home. So Dogen, also another, somehow these cluster of guys, this 2 weeks keep coming. He was around the 1200s in Japan, more or less. And he talks about what his teacher taught him. His teacher said that Zazen, so the simplicity, the just staying, the being naked, the possibility of two minds meeting, or us meeting ourselves deeply in innocence. He says, thinking and hearing about it is like being outside the gate and doing it. So just sitting, or just lying, or just the simplicity, just staying, whatever posture is what is meant, is like coming inside and being at home, comfortable, no hurry. So we find out what it is for us and what it feels like to stay home. Struggle and love and do what we will. And so in Wendell Berry's home, there's a place by the river. And it's starting to be about this time of day there by the river. And there are trees moving in the wind. And then the wind starts to die down, to wear out. All that movement starts to wear out at some point. And so in the poem, that's what's happened. And then on the other side of the river, there's a tree that's reflected in the water, in the face of the river. And that reflection, so the upside down tree, is still moving, because the surface of the river is still moving from the movements of the wind that has stopped. So sometimes we're not so much busy, but there's still movements. It takes a while for that to calm down. And it's okay. It's also beautiful. And it's getting darker and darker. And there comes a kingfisher. Do you know what that is? They're also in India, these birds. Yeah, kingfisher bird. They fish. And so there's a kingfisher. And the very beginning of the poem, Wendell Berry says that he seems to be doing something he couldn't do for any other reason than joy. And he's just flying down the river, and every once in a while splashing in the river, just flying and splashing, flying and splashing. And Wendell is just sitting there and hearing it go, the sound go off into the dark. And then it comes back. Same, flying, splashing, flying, splashing. And passes going the other way. So it's this movement that Wendell feels has no use. It's that kind of movement of being out of character. And so he says that the kingfisher passes by again, splashing. And he sees the mirrored tree, so the tree that's reflected in the water, the mirrored tree darkening, stirs with the water's inward life. What has made it so? So we're just going to pause. The poem's not over yet. We're just going to pause. What has made it so? Just leaving room sometimes. What has made it so? What is this? So Wendell feels as if, imagines or feels, don't know, senses. The kingfisher has gone back upriver, and it's dark enough now that the night accommodates him, accommodates the bird. Somewhere, somehow. Either where he chose or where it so happened. So it's the simplicity of not an extreme. Sometimes we decide to sit there for the night. And sometimes it just so happens that we're sitting somewhere that we never realized we could sit. And there's a sense of being accommodated. There's room for us. Whether we go there in our playfulness, out of character, naked, we might go to meet someone, or we might be welcome somewhere. But there's room for us, that confidence. And again, feeling this mood of the light going down, and finally can just, in the darkness, more, I don't know if you've been by a river at this time, but it's so true, his impression of the river. So he's very open, and the impression of the river comes over him, over Wendell Berry. I don't know if I should call him Mr. Berry. I think of him as Wendell. My uncle Wendell lives in Kentucky, too. What has made it so? And what is he saying? It? The tree, the movement, the bird, all of that? What has made it so? Feeling this way that we can kind of travel down out of the head, out of the view, out of the thought, out of even the playful movement, that coming to rest, the movement of the outer forces dying down, the push outward dying down. Something stirs with the water's inward life. Have you ever experienced that? Just the river, by the river, it's getting dark, and it calms down. It doesn't always calm down, but some days it calms down. And just in that light, it's visible some inward movements of the river's life that just quietly. The mirrored tree, darkening. He's obviously also not only talking about the outer experience, but himself, ourselves. The mirrored tree, darkening, stirs with the water's inward life. Something got our attention. We stayed. Things got quiet. What has made it so that there's an inward life that can show in the quietness? Is that the question? What has made it so? A quietness in it. No question can be asked in. What has made it so? So receiving impressions in a different way when we're not trying to impress or be impressed. We can appreciate the movements of an inward life. We can be moved with the world in harmony. Including in harmony with this deep quietness that's in it. Have you any questions or comments? Regarding struggle.
Where there is struggle, it's not necessarily where the truth will come, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then, struggle is also in that house, residing in that home, maybe better to say than a house. I'm not sure what I want to ask, because there's no way of, there's no like, I'm sure there's no like a formula, mathematical formula to say when struggle is good or necessary and when it's not. It's, but I want you to say something about it.
Yeah. Could you hear? Yeah? So we could go into it next time. And for now, it's partly to get the feeling quality difference. A struggle where I'm trying to be like what you described in your home, but I don't have a farm. And feeling, yes, it is a discovery, it can be a huge discovery to realize that in the midst of struggle, it's not so likely that there's going to be an insight. But it doesn't mean that all struggle is unnecessary. So we're feeling for what is unnecessary struggle and what is necessary. So one way is through practice feeling the difference of superficial struggle about the most important things and a deep struggle, sometimes about something that seems totally ridiculous. Can't believe this is hard. Or about the most important things. Yesterday there was the image of us or a creature in a womb where there's nourishment and there's floating, buoyant support, space. And in between the two, literally, physically, in between the two, grows a central line, for example, versus the primal streak comes up from here to here, which there isn't all of this, so what is that? To from what will become here to what will become here. And then that dies down and then grows the pre-spine. In between the nourishment and the buoyant support. And so yesterday we talked about growth happening there in the presence of those two kinds of love, so to say. Or two kinds of necessities. And it's when we start to get the hang of it, not the hang up of it, but the hang of it, so we start to realize that growth sometimes is a pain that isn't so bad, as Kelsten described yesterday. And sometimes it's good and good. So to clarify, there might be a medicine needed to allow us to come into the growth, and then the growth might be shocking, painful, sudden, unexpectedly, we're in a different shape, out of character, and we're disoriented. Or in such a lovely way, a blossoming of the lotus flower. Or even we assume the blossoming of the lotus flower as to be a pleasant thing. Maybe for the flower itself, it's terribly painful. All its life, it's been like this, and it has to crack open every morning. There's a way that not just mentally that we get the idea, but that our system starts to agree with growth in this sense. Not growth for its own sake, to show off, etc., but what needs to happen can happen in that nakedness. When we let there be nourishment and buoyant, spacious support, and something starts to happen and we don't try to do something with it. We don't try to make it into something that we could buy and we don't try to see how bad and wrong we are, that we don't deserve this or whatever, this can't be that, or we just stay. And some, the system starts to enjoy and go with it in a way that's not mental. It's nice when the mind can agree in, as well, but it's more important when our nonverbal system agrees with. Thank you for being here. Thank you for staying home too. May our practice and our lives be dedicated to the benefit, the nourishment, the spacious support, and the liberation of all, in all times and places, including ourselves here and now.